Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to Focus Asia Pacific from PCJ Radio International. Today we present part one of a two-part documentary looking at the CIA's secret war in Laos. Radio producer Peter Langstanton thought his father was a paper-pusher bureaucrat in the U.S. State Department. Then one day his father revealed his double life as a spy. Much of his father's past was actually a lie. He never fought in the Vietnam War, as he said. Instead, he was involved in a covert mission in the 1960s in Laos under his codename Pigpen. Through deep interviews with ex-CIA and former Laosan soldier, Peter Langstanton tells a story of lies and half-truths, of pride and regret.
Yeah, I just landed in Myrtle Beach. It was about an hour delayed, so...
We saw that. We've been tracking you.
Oh, did I? I'm being tracked.
And yeah. When you get in range of Dillon County, you just ask anybody where the CIA guy lives, and they'll probably tell you.
Your cover has been blown for a while.
Well, I went out undercover when I retired. I don't want to go to my grave in some kind of contrived story.
Yeah. All right, well, if you're sure it's still not too late for you all, then I'll see you in a few hours.
No, I usually don't go to bed until about 1 or 2 in the morning.
Okay. Are you watch up late? You watching YouTube?
No, I'm just usually messing around with... No, you're right. It's YouTube. Okay.
All right, bye.
I'm Peter Langstanton. This is the CIA's secret war in Laos. The summer before I went off to college, my dad and I were sitting in the living room on a Sunday morning, and he turned to me and he said, "Peter, let's go for a drive." This was not something that he ever said to me. He wasn't usually so old-timey and Leave It to Beaver-esque. Ugh. We got in the station wagon, we drove down the lane, and we sat at a red light at the end of our neighborhood. "Peter," my dad said, "it's time to tell you about the family business. Espionage." Car windows were down and the air was syrupy and hot. All the oak leaves along the road were twitching and going belly up. "Open up the glove box," my dad said. "Take out that piece of paper." It was his resume. His real one. At that point, what I knew is my dad worked for the State Department. He was a Foreign Service officer. Over the years, I'd asked him to explain to me what he actually did. Usually, it was instigated by a take-your-kid-to-work day that I never got to participate in, but he never said much. I knew that my dad had fought in the Vietnam War. I'd seen pictures of him in the jungle. I knew he was in Berlin in the 80s. We lived in Jamaica when I was a baby, then Holland, Munich. The resume was all chronological. It had all the same locations and time periods, except the job description for each one of them was completely different. So instead of him being in the Vietnam War, it said, "Alan Stanton, Laos, 1968 to 1970, CIA paramilitary." Later, when I eventually saw my brothers, I was mad at my older brother because he already knew and didn't tell me. And my little brother, who was still too young to be in on the family secret, I felt like I was on the other side of a one-way mirror, looking at him. I wondered if this distance that secrets create was why Dad was so emotionally airtight with us. At the end of the drive, my dad and I turned back into our neighborhood and came down the driveway. And I asked him, "Does Mom know?" "Oh," Dad said. "She works there too."
I gotta fix that driveway alarm.
And he says, "Peter, it's time to tell you about the family business. Espionage."
Oh my God, leave it now to be dramatic. How old were you then?
18.
18.
Do you think you can still have a genuine relationship with someone when one person is deceiving the other?
Yes. You're the same people. You've just got a different name. Tom Norton. Thomas L. Norton. And I retired after 30 years with CIA. I retired as chief of the agency's effort against North Korea.
I went down to South Carolina to visit Tom Norton. He was my dad's best friend in the CIA. I'm talking to him because I can't talk to my dad.
Your father and I, we had a solid year of training. Just in operations.
So what did you know about the CIA before you joined?
Nothing. It was the height of the Le Carre novels. James Bond and all that kind of stuff.
Did you think you were going to be a spy as you understood it then?
Yeah.
One of my the fondest memories of him in the last couple of years of his life was we got him a bottle of cognac.
Uh-huh.
Only on Christmas Eve, he would pour himself a little glass and he would put on Dvorak on those speakers. And he would close his eyes and drink cognac.
Yeah, he introduced me to classical music, really. I will never forget Scheherazade, for God's sake. It played for 3 days straight up in Lafayette, New Jersey.
My dad died a few years ago, and he said something on his deathbed that is sort of the whole reason I'm doing this piece. He looked at me and he said, "I'm prouder of what we did in Laos than just about anything, other than you boys." In the late 1960s, during the Vietnam War, my dad was in his late 20s, around my age, and the CIA sent him to Laos to wage a shadow war. He and a cadre of other young guys, they were supposed to work with this Laotian hill tribe and form them into a secret army to fight against the communists.
A Laotian camp near the North Vietnam border. The troops are not regular Laotian soldiers, but members of the secret army, a 35,000-strong force trained and financed by the CIA.
The Hmong, H-M-O-N-G. They were already fighting the North Vietnamese and the communists before we even got there. And we supplied them, helped organize them.
My dad and the other CIA guys, they were supposed to be advisors to the Hmong. They were not supposed to get their hands dirty. This was a shadow war.
There are no American combat forces in Laos. We do have aerial reconnaissance. We do have perhaps some other activities. I won't discuss those other activities at this time.
It's hard for me to tell if the CIA was empowering the Hmong to fight a war they wanted to fight, or the CIA was using the Hmong to fight America's war. But either way, things did not go well in Laos. The young CIA guys were largely calling the shots out there. And I've read rumors of all sorts of misconduct. One officer named Tony Poe allegedly went rogue with his own private army of villagers, like Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now. The PBS documentary series Frontline reported on rumors of drug trafficking with CIA planes. The country was carpet bombed, and unexploded mines and shells continue to steal limbs away from farmers and children today. And at least two books I read reference the use of child soldiers in the ranks of the secret army. It's really hard to imagine my dad being involved in that sort of thing. And if he was, I don't understand why he would say that the CIA's secret war in Laos was his proudest achievement.
The 2nd of July, 1969. My day actually started last night. Hal Stanton met me at the airport when I arrived about 11:30 p.m. We set up in the hotel.
Anyway, we got together and we started touring Bangkok. This morning, we got about... When I say we were sightseeing bars. We were having drinks. And he said, oh, by the way, you're going to have a call sign, a name. One guy was Starch.
Linus, Alabama.
And I just looked up and I said, well, we're in the Naga Bar. What about that? Nobody ever called me Naga. They called me Tom. Now, he was Pigpen. People thought that was funny. Naga was not, but he's famous. He's Pigpen. And then he said, well, I got to go back to Long Chin. I said, okay. After a couple of days, the guy came rushing up and,
you Tom Norton?
I said, are you Al Stanton's friend, Tom Norton? I said, yeah.
Come on. We got to get you processed.
He said he crashed yesterday. He won't walk again. He's been evacuated. And I said, what? I just done there partying with him, and he just crashed. We're talking about my best friend. And he said, come on, we got to get you up there to replace him. Replace him? I can't replace him. I don't know crap. But I did. The chopper went up, and it lost power. And it fell back down and rolled down the hill. And they had a load of hand grenades on it at the moment. They ended up upside down. Your father hit his harness releases and got out, and then went back and got the pilot out, whose back was broken. Well, Al's was too. By this time, the locals were on the radios calling down that the
chopper's gone down, we need help.
So help comes flocking in, and they evacuate your father and the pilot, fly them to the Philippines. When you were injured, again, choking on, excuse me, they took care of you. I don't care what was involved. They flew, I think it was a C-130 with him and the pilot from Thailand to the Philippines just to get medical help. Sorry about this. But don't put that in your program.
Why wouldn't you want me to use that?
Because I was a tightly controlled person emotionally. But I no longer am because of my age. And I'm embarrassed by it.
To my mind, when I hear somebody getting emotional, it shows a genuineness and a vulnerability that I think...
I defer to your judgment.
You know, there's certain places where you get emotional and you're talking about something and it says more than you can articulate with words.
Yeah.
So
You're Al Stanton's son. I trust you. I'm going to get another scotch.
Would you like a beer?
Oh,
damn.
These legs are...
On the 10th of July, 1969, I arrived at the job site, Longchen, yesterday morning and went to work in the afternoon.
Longchen was the CIA's secret base for the shadow war in Laos, headquarters.
I flew for about 3 hours getting a feel for the terrain. It looks as I imagined the moon would if it had clouds. The land is jumbled and twisted. It's awesome.
The first day I got there, I arrived about noon, and by 3 o'clock, I was 100 miles behind enemy lines in plaid golf shorts.
When Tom Norton got there, he took over my dad's job. My dad was still recovering from the helicopter crash.
I'm staying in a bunkhouse with a bunch of other guys. I was told to put my personal effects in Stanton's room.
They put me in Al's room, Al's bed, everything. And his AK-47's right there by the bed. I got a picture of it.
It contained a bunk with mosquito netting, a chair, and a Russian AK-47 assault rifle propped up in the corner. It rained several times during the 24-hour period. Consequently, everything feels damp and clammy, and there's mud inside and out. The accommodations definitely smack of a logging camp. I like it.
So, as I understand it from Tom Norton, one of my dad's jobs was to run the road watch teams. He would organize groups of Hmong soldiers and send them to go surveil the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The Hmong would sneak through the jungle and watch North Vietnamese moving into South Vietnam along the road. The Hmong soldiers would report back to him, and he would call in airstrikes. The CIA was flying a lot of planes in Laos, so many so that the code name for CIA in Laos was Sky.
Vang Pao took me on a quick tour of the area he's just recaptured.
And General Vang Pao, who was the commander of all the Hmong forces, he thought that American air power was just what he needed to win the war.
The enemy have taken to the hills. Vang Pao denies this success was due to Americans.
As you can see, I have not seen. Have you seen an American troop today?
No,
and here?
I haven't seen any Americans.
Yeah, like this, you know. No have American, no have Thai, no have anything come here.
I don't think I'd been there over a month before I knew this was a losing proposition. But I don't think there was ever any chance of winning the war.
Did Vang Pao and the Hmong know that?
I'm sure Vang Pao did. I'm sure he did not tell the Hmong, but... Well, I'm not sure of that at all. I can't put words in his mouth, but...
3 November 1969. Last night I got drunk. Last night several of us got drunk. All young men, most unmarried, and all questioning the reason for our being here. You can't really appreciate the pressures on everyone out here. It's the kind of pressure generated within oneself. There's no one telling me to do this or do that. There's no one criticizing if I do less than my best. I've been leaving at 7:30 and working until 9 or 10 o'clock for 2 weeks now without a break. In a regular job, that would be a great excuse to say screw it and take off for a while. I could do that here and no one would say anything. The people who depend on me certainly wouldn't, because they're used to being stepped on and slighted. They're the only voice that I would be forced to contend with would be my own.
That was one of the biggest things about CIA. An individual could really make a significant difference. Just one person. Well, like the day I evacuated the refugees and the babies, that was me.
We Lima Site 184 came under increasingly heavy attacks, and it became evident that the people would have to leave. The station refused to become involved in a mass evacuation, saying that they were not responsible for refugees. This was totally unacceptable as far as I was concerned.
CIA wouldn't give me the air power to get them out, so I went over to Pop Buell, the USAID guy, and he gave me every plane he had.
The aircraft landed at Lima Site 184, where I had arranged for mothers and infant children to be assembled.
And the mother had to be lactating so that she could feed the babies.
We loaded the porters with lactating mothers and infants too small to survive the march. Two infants to each mother.
And that was the day the pilot got lost. Somebody had given him a sheet and the course was 10 degrees off. And we couldn't find a site. It was smoky season. All you could do is look straight down to see the ground.
We had been searching for it for some time when I looked down through a hole in the clouds to see flooded rice paddies. There are no rice paddies in northern Laos.
We were either in Vietnam or China, I don't know what.
We had absolutely no idea where we were.
We began to run out of fuel. Tick, tick, tick. We had about 10 minutes worth of fuel left for flying. There's no use in sending out a Mayday. We didn't know where we were either. And I thought I saw a mountaintop way the heck, 30 miles away. I said, go that way, because we're going to crash anyway. It didn't matter where we crashed.
It turned out to be Lima Site 50. We landed safely and found one drum of aviation fuel by the strip, more than enough to get us home.
I almost got off and kissed the ground. I know something else.
Despite the screw-up, 60 infants and 30 mothers were rescued.
That was a hell of a 32nd birthday, I can tell you that. It's one of the best things I ever did. I figure I saved 60 babies that day.
I never did tell the CIA what I'd done that day. Oh, Lord. Nobody else was taking an initiative. God knows how many of them would have been killed. The little soldiers in Laos, they were killed by the dozens. And I made a point of when I brought back their dead at home at night to help unload them to their family. I probably held more dead bodies than most people have babies. Oh, let's do something else. Well, that's the most talking I've done in the past 2 years, I think.
In trying to find out why my dad was so proud of Laos, I think one reason is that these guys had all the excitement of war without the blood on their hands. They were there, they were in the thick of it, but they weren't the ones doing the fighting and the dying. At least not for the most part. And that's because this was a shadow war. That's the whole point of the shadow war, that you wage war without actually waging it. That's the way it was supposed to work for the United States. It's possible that it sort of worked that way on a psychological level with Tom and my dad and all the other guys. The secrecy and distance, it allowed them to handpick what they were responsible for and what they weren't.
Pictures of Laos. That's a bomb going off, an American bomb going off on a target. As you've probably seen, Laos is the most bombed nation in the world. More bombs are dropped on Laos than the whole of World War II. That was my buddy there.
I'm about that tall. No, I love the kids. They're as cute as they could be.
So in that picture is a boy in uniform?
Yeah, it's a joke. He's not a soldier. Yeah. Oh, that was your father. This is the bossy, your party for your father when he left. He was a guest of honor. And this was in Vang Pao's house. He was the commander of all the Hmong. At the end of your life, you regret the things you didn't do, not what you did do. There's my little soldier again. Well, I think we had kind of an informal rule that the boy had to be at least as tall as an M1 rifle to become a soldier, which is about 4 feet tall or 3.5 or something.
So they had to be as tall as an M1 rifle, which is...
maybe 10 years old, yeah. Something like that. And they were brave. They were too young to be afraid. The old experience would run. Little kids would stay right there and fire and shoot and everything else.
How did you feel about that when kids were fighting wars?
Quite frankly, it didn't bother me. We were fighting a war. We couldn't afford niceties of this is good and this is bad. But there weren't that many of them. I don't want to start another controversy that CIA molested the populace.
And next week on the program, we will bring you part two of that look at the CIA's secret war in Laos. If you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think of the program or have any ideas or suggestions, our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.